You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Lorenzo Ghiberti spent 27 years creating brilliant gilded bronze doors for the Baptistry of San Giovanni in Florence, Italy. These 15th-century treasures have recently undergone a major restoration, and several of the doors' panels and sculptures have been traveling to major U.S. museums. The exhibition, Gates of Paradise, Lorenzo Ghiberti's Renaissance masterpiece, is now at the Metropolitan Museum of Art through January 13th, and I'm very pleased to welcome James Draper, the exhibit's curator, to this show today. Hello.
Hello, thanks.
What led to the creation of these reliefs? Hadn't Ghiberti won a famous competition to create other door panels for the baptistry years earlier?
That's right, another set of doors. And these, in this case, it was a question of the major merchants' guild wanting to make a monument in this baptistry that is an absolute focus of the Florentine civic life.
And it, they were so pleased with what he had done in the first group that they said, we have to get more from this guy?
Yes. As far as we know, there wasn't a competition this time, but he was simply working on his own merits.
Well, the competition actually involved a famous scene from the Old Testament, the sacrifice of Isaac. But then the pieces that he made were from the New Testament. So this was finally the opportunity to do some things from the Old Testament?
To go back to the Old Testament, yes.
And how different are these? Do they change in style and quality from
radically,
the early ones?
Really radically. The opening up of space is something that you just can't believe your own eyes. When you look from the simple late Gothic quatrefoil panels of the old doors to these wide-open landscapes and cityscapes, it's utterly different.
And that's because Florence was going through the beginnings of the Renaissance at that time?
Well, yes, and Ghiberti was a major player.
Now, why Florence and why not Siena or Rome or one of the other major cities of Italy?
I think it has to do with the wealth and a certain ambition of Florence. It was absolutely rich through the wool trade. And it has its own traditions of strutting its stuff in terms of monuments.
Were the artists really competitive with each other? For the first set of pieces in the competition, the runner-up was Brunelleschi, one of the greatest architects that ever lived. And he did some pretty wonderful things himself.
Well, that's right. That's right. Ghiberti is up there in terms of ambitions. He's also an architect. He's chiefly a goldsmith, which is his intro to making these extremely detailed works.
But he'd also worked on frescoes.
Had he?
Yes.
He did stained glass designs, certainly.
Well, I looked him up. So
okay.
I know he also had worked on frescoes, and there is a sense here of almost painterliness.
That's right. It's right, in the wealth of pictorial detail.
What was the attitude toward relief sculpture at the time? Did people consider it lesser to freestanding sculpture in the round?
Not really. You have the greats working on it. Donatello is his greatest contemporary in relief sculpture. It's a thing that we perhaps make a mistake to distinguish so sharply between painting and relief. They're after the same kind of end results, which is, above all, verisimilitude and a variety to greet the eye.
Now, Donatello came out of his workshop, didn't he?
Donatello is named as having been in the workshop. We simply don't know what he did. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were in that shop, leading painters. We don't always know what they did. His sons were also involved, maybe more in a business capacity. We don't really know what people were doing.
Well, when we talk about the great artists of the early Renaissance, we're likely to hear about Masaccio or Brunelleschi or Fra Angelico, Fra Filippo Lippi. Less likely Lorenzo Ghiberti, and yet the work is extraordinary, and he is a key figure in the development of the Renaissance. Has art history kind of overlooked him for some reason?
I think art history got stalled. A brilliant monograph came out on him by Richard Krautheimer, and things didn't progress very much, and one has been locked into the position of judging him through black and whites with the doors head on. And so their three-dimensionality hasn't really been grasped until cleaning and removal from the gates and then cleaning to see them in all their glory. He just wasn't suspected of being as fabulous as he is.
So this is only a recent development, this cleaning?
This cleaning campaign certainly helped.
And when did that happen? There were the floods. They must have, in the 60s, what was it, 68?
Yes.
That ruined so much in Florence. Did they have an effect on the reliefs?
They did. They knocked down six of them into the raging waters, and that's when they could, in drying them out, they could begin to sense that there was this wealth of original gilding that they had to cope with. And so there have actually been two campaigns since the flood of 66.
So they're bronzes that are gilded with gold?
Yes. It's the mercury gilding process. Gold is brushed on, and then the mercury evaporates underneath that, leaving an amalgam of gold and bronze.
Can you tell us about the three scenes that are now on display at the Met?
Yes, the creation of man and of woman is the most famous. It's that wonderful one where the nudes are very well studied. They're also newly well articulated. And they are set in a brilliant landscape with vivacious details such as birds in trees, lizards, you name it. But above all, orchestrated in this atmosphere.
So these are nudes that he obviously used real models for. He knew how to and that might have been a major change.
I believe that it was. He had obviously looked at Greco-Roman sculpture a great deal, but I do think they look naturalistic and as if he studied from the living model.
Roberta Smith described them in her review in the New York Times as cinematic.
Yes. I think one reason for that is the following up of episode, so that you have a biblical story, but it's subdivided. And so he finds means of continuing the story across the plane of the relief by chopping it up, so that you have, in the one scene of the creation, you have actually four subparts.
How did they come to be called the Gates of Paradise?
It's a nickname that Michelangelo is said to have given them.
Because they were so admired at the time.
Yes, they knocked people's socks off, literally. They were given the place of honor. It was just expected they'd be another pair of doors, but when they were unveiled, they were seen to be so splendid that they were taken around the corner of the building and to the place of honor facing the cathedral.
How long did it take them to complete all of these pieces?
27 years.
And how many are there altogether?
There are 10 in all.
So that's a lot for each one.
It's a lot.
With a workshop.
With a workshop, but the amount of chasing is so extraordinary, and that's what surely took the most time.
Will they be returned to the baptistry after they finish being traveled?
Not to the baptistry, but to the Museo dell'Opera del Duomo, where a space has been sort of discovered that can take them with their height and all, and where they can be seen from a good distance as well as close up, I hope.
Were they okay when the Germans came? Because the Germans raided many museums and stole some of the world's greatest masterpieces.
Yes, I think probably the German retreat from Florence was too rapid to have menaced them. In any case, they didn't leave the country until just now.
And why have they allowed them out of the country now? Or these three? Because they haven't allowed all of them out.
No. That's the finesse of the High Museum in Atlanta to have made this arrangement. I'm sure there's money is involved, but above all, the Florentines operating from the Opificio delle Pietre Dure particularly like to reveal, to advertise the, what they've done in cleaning.
And was this a dangerous operation? Could these things have been damaged?
No. They could be easily damaged, I suppose, if you used harsh mechanical means. But a laser technique has been developed so as not to disturb any further the equilibrium between the bronze, metal, and the gilt surface.
And I'm assuming now the gilt will be pretty permanent for a long time.
Yeah, it's the original, and it's what you see is original, and let's hope stable forever.
What problems were posed in exhibiting these pieces? I'm sure you had to worry about just how light affected them. And
you know, they sort of installed themselves. I mean, I think the Met team did a brilliant job, but we found that the light in the Velez Blanco patio was fine, that the surrounding of this Renaissance court was complementary to them, and it really sort of took care of itself quite surprisingly well.
So here we are with this rare opportunity. I suspect these doors are not going to be traveling much in the future.
No, they go from here to Seattle, and then they really say that's it.
And then back to Italy.
And back to Italy, reinstalled permanently.
And I would hope doing something for people's sense of just how important Lorenzo Ghiberti was.
Right.
Because he is the major transitional figure in the beginning of the Renaissance. He's doing these things before Masaccio is painting the Brancacci Chapel, isn't he?
Yes, he's taking steps that will influence people forever, not only in terms of perspective, but in terms of the total conquest of nature.
And if he hadn't won the contest, Brunelleschi might not have designed that incredible dome for the Duomo of Florence.
That's right.
And we would have lost one of the greatest architects that ever lived. James Draper is the curator of the Gates of Paradise, Lorenzo Ghiberti's Renaissance masterpiece, on view at the Metropolitan Museum until January 13th. So you don't have all that much time to go see them, and this is the sort of thing that you might actually want to go see more than once. Thank you. It's like going to Italy, practically.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. ¶¶